Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, joined by our reporter, Mark Furman. Mark of Tarlow, Breed, Hart & Rogers. How are you today, Mark?
I'm great, Jonathan. It's great to be with you.
Hey, it's always great to have you and to be on the show with you. What do you have for us today?
Wanted to talk about Chapter 93A. This is the law we've talked about before in Massachusetts that prohibits unfair, deceptive business practices and can allow for attorney's fees for a prevailing party. And if someone is guilty of a willful or knowing violation, they can be liable for not less than double damages nor more than triple damages plus attorney's fees. So so originally, 93A was passed in the 60s, and it applied only to, gave consumer rights against businesses. And but in 1972, the law was changed to so that it applied to many dealings that businesses have with other businesses. So
see,
when
it seems to me that it was
arise, it's common to look at 93A as a potential source of recovery. The Attorney General's office is allowed to promulgate regulations under 93A, and the case I wanted to talk about involved one of their regulations, and it involved two businesses, a company called Limoliner, which is a Massachusetts corporation that operates a fleet of luxury motor coaches, and a company called Datco. Datco Inc. being a Connecticut company that is in the business of repairing buses and motor coaches, and
I believe
and
they're an operator
of,
as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think I've seen vehicles running with their name on it. So I think they're in the transportation field as well.
That's right. So, in any event, Limoliner had a motor coach which was in need of extensive repairs, and Limoliner verbally requested that Datco repair the vehicle's inverter. Now, this is a component that converts power generated by the vehicle into a form usable by passengers to, for example, plug in their electronic devices into onboard outlets. So, you know, we're all like completely dependent on our smartphones and iPads.
Mobile devices and keep us going while we're on the bus.
Yeah, so we of course have to be charging them at all times. And so anyway, Datco generated a list of repairs that Limoliner needed, but they failed to include the repair of the inverter. So why does that matter? There's a 93A regulation promulgated by the Attorney General's office that says it's an unfair or deceptive act or practice for a repair shop prior to commencing repairs on a customer's vehicle to fail to record in writing the specific repairs requested by the customer.
Interesting. And so is this a specific application in that industry?
Yeah, it's under, they have a whole section of regulations that deal with vehicle repair shops, believe it or not. Datco didn't get the repair done in what Limoliner viewed as a timely basis. Limoliner wanted to pick up the motor coach. Datco said, sure, just pay us our $10,000 invoice. Limoliner refused to pay it, and so Datco would not return the vehicle without repayment of its invoice. So Limoliner brought suit in the Massachusetts Superior Court against Datco, and it, you know, sued for a bunch of things, breach of contract, fraud, negligence, and for the return of the vehicle. And one of its claims was 93A, and they alleged that DATCO had violated 93A and engaged in an unfair, deceptive act of practice by failing to record in writing as required by the request for the inverter report. Seems like a small case, right?
gets more complicated. I'm guessing it gets more complicated somewhere.
Well, it's not totally clear, but case gets removed to federal court, and as part of the case, preliminarily, Limoliner is able to recover its motor coach in return for depositing with the court the slightly over $10,000 that DATCO claimed. The case is tried before a magistrate judge, you know, so, and at the end of the day, I think DATCO is found liable to Limoliner for something in the neighborhood of $25,000.
Wow.
However, this is a trial. You know, a lot of
so not only legal, have they not only have they done a lot of repairs, but now it's cost them money to do the repairs. In effect,
it's a lot of legal work. So, the magistrate judge in the federal court decides that this regulation of the attorney general is only intended to apply to consumer. Automobile repairs for consumers.
Interesting.
Not for businesses in the theory that businesses can take care of themselves. Anyway, everything gets appealed to the First Circuit Court of Appeals, and they affirm everything except for this question of whether the regulations apply to work relationships between businesses. And there's a procedure under which they can ask the highest court in a state to answer a particular question for them because they're uncertain about it and it's important. So they, the First Circuit Court of Appeals, asked the question, does this regulation 940 section 5.05 apply to transactions in which the customer is a business entity? And so the case goes to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts. So just a quick pit stop here, Jonathan. We start with the vehicle being held hostage, allegedly for $10,000, a little over that. Lawsuit gets brought in Superior Court, removed to federal court, trial before a magistrate judge.
Let me stop you there for a second, Mark. Why did it get removed to federal court? What's the grounds for that?
According to the decision, it was based upon diversity of citizenship. If there's a state court proceeding in which the claim amount in dispute is in excess of, $75,000, the defendant has a right to remove it if each party is domiciled in a different state. In Massachusetts, is resident in Massachusetts, and the defendant in Connecticut. So DATCO had that right. So now you have a trial in federal court, an appeal to the First Circuit. Now the case goes to the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts, more briefing and argument, and the Supreme Judicial Court decides at great expense, of course, to each of the private parties who were parties to the case, that this regulation does in fact apply to transactions in which the customer is a business entity. So the case shows a lot of things, I think. One is, you know, there's the practical aspect of the case, and, you know, the expense is great to the parties. But, you know, from the Supreme Judicial Court's perspective, this is an area where there's been some dispute. How much of these 93A regulations apply between businesses? They may have been drafted, frankly, largely with consumers in mind. But once the law changed in 1972 to cover many disputes between businesses, not all, but many, then, you know, you have the question of these regulations and how specific will they cover business transactions.
So you have something that was put in place, Mark, to essentially initially to protect consumers, but it sort of took on a life of its own and now becomes more of a deterrent type of law, I guess, to try and prevent businesses from taking advantage of one another. That to me sounds what the initial intent of the law was, but then in 1972 expanded to include businesses.
Yes, and this particular regulation was written in 1976, 4 years after the law had changed to cover businesses. So there was no question that the Attorney General had the power to write regulations that would apply to business to business. The only issue here was whether that was the intent here. So the court looks very closely at the words. It's an unfair or deceptive act or practice for repair shop prior to commencing repairs on a customer's vehicle to fail to record this information. Describing
so again, very broad in the use of customer.
Yeah, customer is broader than, you know, if they said consumer,
right?
In the regulation, it's a very different case. And in some of the regulations, the Attorney General has limited to consumer transactions. Some of those regulations were written before the law changed to include claims between businesses, and different cases, not in Massachusetts, and different authors have taken different positions about the applicability of some of these regulations in businesses. But these regulations, some of them are very specific and very hard to comply with if you're not set up to be completely aware of the details of what the law requires and set up to follow it in every transaction. And you know, a lot of times in business cases that I see, lawyers don't use the regulations perhaps in circumstances that they could, because they spell out much more detailed obligations than just what the statute says, which is very broad, prohibiting unfair or deceptive acts or practices in the conduct of a business. So,
right. I guess in particular in this case, you could look at it and say, you know, obviously an established company, they understand the regs and they're operating within a framework of having understanding the regulations. Was it intentionally deceptive by having the verbal commitment for the repairs versus something in writing? And I guess that's one of the lessons. You know, if you're an established business and you're operating under a regulatory environment, you need to understand what the regulations are.
You do. And, you know, one of the things I always talk about is, you know, there is no such thing as boilerplate. There's, you know, what courts do is they put the words under a microscope once a dispute exists to answer the question that's relevant to that case. Whether they're interpreting a statute, a regulation, or a contract, you know, the starting point is what do the words say?
Yep.
Because that's where principally you're looking for the intent of the legislature, if they're the ones who pass a law, or the public official who drafts regulations, or the parties, if you're talking about a contract. It's the source. You look at the entire statute, regulations, or agreement to try to discern what the intent was. So, you know, people frequently you know, just sign agreements. You know, you're so thrilled to get the business. It's entirely understandable. And but, you know, when something goes wrong, the precise language in the agreement has dramatic consequences for businesses. So something to keep in mind as you as companies enter into particularly important contracts, you know, what exactly is going to happen in the event things don't work out and things don't go. This could have been an entirely innocent error, you know, not writing a specific one of the many repairs that were being requested. So if this regulation didn't exist, you know, absent proof that they were intentionally omitting it, it wouldn't be a 93A violation to forget to write down one of, let's say, there were hypothetically 10 items that needed to be repaired. You know, usually, you know, 93A has an element of what I call no good nick conduct, you know, or no good nick intent.
Right, that's the that's the deceptive aspect.
But here, that's right, deceptive, unfair. And, you know, mere negligence or a mere breach of contract isn't enough, the cases teach us. But now you're dealing with a specific regulation with a specific set of requirements. So,
I assume that why this got kicked up and why it became an issue was, you know, here they have an asset in their business that is taken off the road for a period of time, and they have a significant you know, issue related to their customer base, and they want that repaired, and so the asset's out of service for a number of days. It comes back and it hasn't been repaired, and I'm sure they're sitting there going, well, you know, we lost X number of dollars in on use of the asset, and now you know, it still hasn't been repaired.
Right. It looked like this was like a 3-month deal. And I think, you know, it's not really, those details aren't described in the case, but I have a feeling that Limoliner was pretty upset at how much time it took. And,
Right, because I suspect if it was just an issue, if it hadn't gotten dealt with, and, you know, keep it another 2 days and get it dealt with, and we'll be over and done with this, that it was less of that issue, more of the opportunity cost of not having the asset for a prolonged period of time, and then getting it back and not having the repair done.
Right. Yeah. So my suggestion is just, you know, just be aware. Slightly off topic in a way, but I see it all the time. It's just be aware of the contract terms you're signing, and you know, use your lawyers effectively so you understand what your risks are if things don't go well. And suggestion is, you know, when things don't go well, you know, in almost every business case, disputes between companies now, except for where 93A is excluded, you see claims under 93A. But, you know, consider whether there's anything in the regulations that can be helpful to your position.
Sounds great. And the other takeaway that you mentioned earlier is there is no such thing as boilerplate when it comes to contracts.
Exactly.
Good. Good stuff, Mark. As always, an interesting story, an interesting case. Is that on appeal right now, or is that is it final judgment? Or
it's, well, now that the Supreme Judicial Court has answered the question, the case will go back to federal court where and then the First Circuit will remand it back to the district court. And now it looks like the attorney's fees, I don't know if there are any extra damages involved here, and I'm skeptical that there would be a willful or knowing violation that would trigger double to triple damages. But under 93A, even if it's not a willful or knowing violation, you can recover reasonable attorney's fees. So now limo liner in the federal district court will be arguing that all of its legal fees, I suspect, starting with the beginning of the litigation, through its removal into federal court, through its trial in the federal district court, through its appeal to the First Circuit Court of Appeals, through the
sounds like a lot of zeros.
Sounds like a lot of legal fees, a lot more than the judgment that they entered into.
Right.
And
so
that's
as always, Mark, a great case and interesting story, and we'll have to circle back and hear the next step of it and how it comes out. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today, Mark. It's been a pleasure as always, and an interesting case, as I said, and story. And why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, because you're always there to dispense great advice.
I can be reached at 617-218-2025 or at mfurman, F-U-R-M-A-N, at tbhr-law.com.
Wonderful, Mark, and appreciate it as always. And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.